Okay, so the next test is back from a break with Dave Gardner and Judy Pering.
It's great to see you, Judy.
Yeah, it's good to be back.
Thank you for joining us on the Next Us podcast,
where we help each other find our way in this crazy world, with a particular focus on the Pikes Peak region.
You're listening to Studio 809 Podcasts. This is what community sounds like.
We're coming to you from the Studio 809 Community Podcast Studio at The Next Us, a professional cooperative environment for small businesses in downtown Colorado Springs. Welcome.
It's great to be back from the break. It was longer than we thought, but we both had too much on our plate, so forgive us.
It's just amazing how time flies, huh? How many people say that? How often?
Yeah. Why don't we jump right into it? Any news of note here at The Next Us?
Sure. So, you know, we are all ages, all stages, all walks of life. We've got all kinds of different businesses going on here. So some of the new things coming up, we've got One Business Connection Networking on Thursdays at noon. And it's inviting businesses to come together, kind of talk to each other and do the network thing. So that's exciting. We've also had today an event, and this will happen about twice a year, the Rocky Mountain Barter Group. And I don't know if anyone's heard of that, but Rocky Mountain Barter is really a cool concept where professionals are bartering their services. So if you've ever heard of someone who is going to do a trade for you, where you trade your services, there can sometimes be a moment where someone wants to trade with you and you don't need their services. And so a direct trade isn't going to work. So the Rocky Mountain Barter System is something that allows you to put your service at a certain value, the dollar value, and they create barter dollars in this whole banking system where then you can barter and trade with someone with barter dollars and you don't have to use those barter dollars back at that same service. You can go to so many other companies and businesses locally that are using the barter system. So Rocky Mountain Barter was here today and that was exciting. Great to hear some new local businesses and things that are supporting each other outside of the national dollar.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Kind of a cool concept.
Yep.
So they're here twice a year about, and then we've got some new practitioners in the building. We are rooted in health, wellness, and fitness. So the Self-Defense Academy, which has been here and is teaching people how to defend themselves with the kind of physics behind jujitsu. It's not for competition. It's not for sport, but it is for self-defense. And it starts with knowing that you are worth defending. So this is a really great group. We're happy to have them here. They're available every day at 10 a.m. and again at 6 p.m. for classes, but they've just opened Mondays and Thursdays, 6 a.m. So people who are, you know, working the traditional business hours and can't make the other things, there's now a 6 a.m. class on Mondays and Thursdays, followed by a 7 a.m. yoga. So pretty cool new offerings there. And then we're doing on Wednesdays a healthy pressed juice and an Axon Action Club. Now, this is a getting things done club. So this does not have to necessarily be entrepreneurs, but anyone locally in the community who needs an accountability group to help them conquer some goals. So that's been a lot of fun to play with is the Axon Action Club. And then the last thing I'm going to talk about, because I think that this is going to lead us into what we'll talk about here in a little bit, is our Rocky Mountain Energy Infusion Group. They've been here in the building for a little while and they're raising vibrations from this spot, you know, generating out beyond. But essentially what they do is they have created an environment of a subjective high optimal vibration, an electrical current, if you will, with scalar technology. And through the law of homeostasis, the idea is that everything in nature works until it reaches a balance, a natural balance. So if you were to have a smoke from a fire, that smoke is going to dissipate and dissipate and dissipate until the air has reached its natural balance.
Makes sense.
And so essentially we will match the environment that we are in. And we are electric beings. Everything that's live is electric and has a current that can be measured. So when people say high vibes, that's actually a real thing. Optimal health can be measured between 70 and 90, I believe it's hertz. And so this system operates generating a toroidal field of energy at this high level of vibration. And the idea is we come in and immerse ourselves in this environment and we can't bring the system down. It's subjective. So we must rise to meet it. And so this is a cutting edge kind of way to recharge your cells, activate the centers of your body and allow you to, you know, work at an optimal rate. And so Rocky Mountain Energy Fusion is now collaborating with Sound Bowl and Vibrational Healing. And so they've got some events throughout the month that I am also a part of, where we are bringing our sound bowls, our chimes, our deep drums and gongs into the space, so that while you're kind of immersed in the vibration and also chromotherapy in the room itself, we're also kind of surrounding you with this, the vibration of sound. So pretty cool things going on here at the Next S.
Yeah. And I'm really looking forward to trying that out. I definitely want to experience that and see.
It's really something. I mean, you walk in the room and your hair raise up, but we also have another practitioner who's coming in, and she is going to be offering, so this coming soon, a blood test. So she's going to draw your blood just a tiny bit and run tests on it before you go into the room. And then you'll spend an hour, 2 hours in the room, come back out and test the blood again so that we can kind of really scientifically, objectively see what is happening to our bodies when we're in the space.
And they expect to see a difference just in what's
they do
measured in your blood.
Yes.
Wow.
So I'm looking forward to finding out what that means.
Yeah. Wild. Now, you've mentioned many interesting things. So if somebody wants to kind of dig into any of these, is there a good spot for them to go on the internet?
Sure. So Facebook or Instagram, check out The Next Us. We will broadcast all of these community offerings as they happen, when they happen. Okay. You know, we're looking forward to waking up the outside of the building for springtime. And we've got more First Friday events as well, community events to come. So this coming one will be Cinco de Mayo. So keep an eye on us on Instagram and Facebook at The Next Us, and you can learn about all these other cool businesses and offerings.
Great. We are recording this episode on April 18th. Folks will be listening somewhere later. So some things that we say will be past history by the time you hear this podcast, and especially relevant probably as we scream through zooming out here, talk a little bit about what's happening in the world.
Tell me, former president on trial, first time in history. Tell me what's going on, Dave.
Well, Monday of this week, Donald Trump, his first criminal trial began, and former President Donald Trump has to sit in that courtroom every day that the court is in session until there's a jury verdict. It's expected to take as many as 6 or maybe even 8 weeks for this thing to go down. And this is just one of the 4 different court cases that he is facing this year. They won't all go to trial this year, probably, but this one actually made it to trial. And it's in Manhattan, and it's about falsifying business records to conceal the payment of hush money to a film star who claims that he had a tryst with. And so the prosecution is alleging that he falsified business records to conceal that that was a hush money payment in order to affect the outcome of the 2016 election, to keep that from the voting public.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then more cases to follow.
More to follow. There were 91 different criminal counts alleged among these 4 trials, but some of those got thrown out. So now he's down to 88 or something like that. But anyway, a lot of the news world is really focusing on this trial. No cameras in the courtroom, but we get reports from reporters that are in the courtroom. And of course, that's happening while we're in the middle of an election year. So we'll see what happens there.
You know, I mean, and it makes me think of like when you see these TV shows about politics and about all of the things that are happening behind the scenes that are just put such a sour taste in your mouth about politics. And it's like, could this happen really to any of these top politicians? I mean, if there was really to be a deep dig on all these guys and women who are, you know, cutting corners to get to the top, you know, using other people to climb the ladder kind of thing. I mean, who's out there? You know what I mean? Who can we bring out there to lead the people that's not built on such a dirty path?
Well, I kind of hope this is a worst case scenario here. I tend to think that it is. I think that most politicians, I think it would be pretty hard for the justice system to come up with roughly 90
counts.
I think, you know, now Donald Trump's going to tell you, oh, well, this is all just made up by my political opponents. I tend to think they'd have a hard time doing that in multiple jurisdictions. I really think if you live the life of a con man, eventually it might catch up to you. And I think that's happening here. Okay. And I think there are other politicians who have court cases coming up for accepting bribes and things like that. So they're not all perfect, but I kind of hope that most of them are a lot closer to living by their values than this, I hope.
It's so disheartening to hear stuff like this. You know, it's those moments where you're like, oh my gosh, like these people in positions of power, what is really going on? Like what game are they playing and what rules are they playing by?
I don't really want to belabor it, but it's an interesting subject. And I was just saw on the news this morning, I was reminded of that they played some clips of some Republican leaders who had, back when Donald Trump was first running for president, they had pretty horrible things to say about Donald Trump.
Oh, wow.
But because they're Republicans and because he became the nominee and then became the president today, some of them today, you would think that they think he's a saint.
Oh, funny.
They've changed, you know, they just say what they need to say, what is politically expedient. And I think that's disappointing.
Yeah.
But there are also a large number of people who worked in the first Trump administration who have come out now saying, sorry, I shouldn't have done that. And you need to know that this is a dangerous man that we do not want to have back in the White House. So there's a little bit of this and a little bit of that there. But we need to get back to a world where we can expect more of our elected representatives for them to do what's right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, not what's expedient.
Oh, my goodness.
Sad, yeah. And, of course, the humanitarian crisis in Gaza continues. Netanyahu, who has been leading Israel in this response to the October 7th attack by Hamas, it's been pretty brutal. And even if it was right, you know, he's basically lost most of the world's faith and respect by the way he's waged that battle. A lot of people have died and are suffering. And the United States, I think, is changing its tune. You know, the Biden administration's been pretty supportive of Israel. We've always been an ally and a supporter of Israel. But Netanyahu's making it harder and harder to do that. And I think there's more and more pressure from the U.S. in diplomatic channels for them to be a whole lot more surgical about the way they go after Hamas. So that's hogging
a lot
of headlines.
Well, but that is kind of what Hamas is doing on purpose, right? I mean, they're hiding behind the innocents so that there's a path of destruction to get to them.
Yeah. So it's going, I think, exactly the way they want it to go.
Jeez.
There's got to be a better way. And then real quick, I'll give you a, kind of an update on my campaign for president. Continues to be a non-news item.
No way.
not reading about it in the New York Times or seeing any stories on network news or anything, but I keep trying. And so we're trying to alert people to the fact that we're in ecological overshoot and we really can't continue business as usual. No real expectation that I would be elected, but we thought that by running that I might be able to change some of the conversations and
create some awareness.
Yeah. And so we keep trying new things. So we just did try something new. We did a coffee with Dave at the Wild Goose Meeting House last Saturday.
That. How did it go?
Tell you the truth, no one came.
No way.
Way. That's pretty disappointing. Yeah. That's how it goes.
Well, what it says to me is the most disheartening part about that is that it says that we as a people don't feel that we have any power. That's what that says to me. That's what that says to me. It says an immediate defeatist sentiment.
Yeah. And really connected with that, this is that issue or overlaps it a lot is that they know that I'm not going to get elected. Why support a candidate who has virtually zero chance of being elected? Why waste their time?
Well, I don't even know if it's that, but I think it's just that even like it's difficult even to be moved to push for what you believe in.
Sure.
Because the overpowering, you know, elements that are in place make us feel like it, you know, as much as we want to change anything, where's the path? How do we do it? You know, it's literally that they have succeeded through, and I don't know, you know, I mean, there's always a conversation or a question where you can ask about like, you know, how do they do it? But the divide and conquer, you know, with social media, with isolation, with the things they're doing in the cities, with all of these things that we really have no idea what the power of the masses can do. And it's shocking. That shocks me, Dave, especially here in Colorado Springs. That shocks me.
You know, and it was probably some small things too, like, you know, we really depended on social media to get the word out about that. And it's really hard to get social media to work for you if you're not paying Facebook to, or Instagram. But later on today, April 18th, we're doing a house party. One supporter said, let me throw a house party for you and give you a chance to just meet with some voters and talk with them. And that's not going to be a zero show up.
Okay, sounds wonderful.
Event. I'm looking forward to that. I'm not really looking at it as a big fundraising opportunity. I really just want to answer people's questions and maybe get a little bit of my finger on their pulse. They may help me to understand why no one came to Coffee with Dave, for example. Who knows?
Right.
Also, the more practice I get talking about the issues, the better I am at talking about the issues.
Absolutely.
So I need that practice.
Yeah.
Especially since next week, I am actually on a panel at a big environmental conference in Dallas called EarthX. And you'll find this interesting. The panel I'm on is tackling Better Climate for Democracy. Can a Grand Bargain Detox Our Political Ecosystem? So I'm going to be up there on stage with several other people who are trying to contribute ideas to how do we overcome this broken system we have,
you know,
to where we can get something done.
You know, and it's interesting. I don't know if this is relevant or not. So stop me if it isn't, but some people believe you cannot rely on the government to get things done because they're not as advanced as the free market in the United States. And that's why we have capitalism, because we've got these, you know, cutting edge, you know, and this idea of competition. And we've got these things that really push us to advance and push us to become, you know, further, better, faster, stronger, all these things, you know, kind of outside of the slower working of the government itself. So I'm, you know, watching these ideas with the solar companies, the solar power companies. Mm-hmm. And in my mind, I had understood that you receive these solar panels that are going to provide you for your electrical costs. You pay off the solar panel at a monthly cost that's lower than your electric bill, and then you eventually own the panels. If you make and generate more energy, you can give it back to the grid. The government then has to pay you for it. Mm-hmm. And in this way, we're providing a supplemental foundation of electricity for the growing populations that our utilities can't really, we're passing their threshold. But what I've just been approached by is a company who actually owns the panels. They come in, they put the panels on your roof, but they own them. They maintain them. They have their warranties on them, this, that, and the other thing, but they just charge you less than the electric company. Of course, because they're going to be making the surplus when they charge the utilities for the electricity that's coming off. But in that way, these free market companies are going to be able to surpass the route that it takes for the government to make a change, the route that it takes for a government to do something that's going to be eco-friendly, and they're going to be able to, you know, bring solar power to people who would not be able to access it otherwise. You know, do you see what I'm saying? How I'm going with this is, like, you know, it might be up to the free market.
Yeah, you wouldn't expect a public utility to come up with that solution. Maybe a for-profit utility would, but
right. Okay. So it just was interesting to me because it's like, and then in that way, it also shows us where does the power lie? You know, come on, we've got to get together. Like, it's us.
Yeah, and apparently, you know, in Washington, D.C., let's say, you know, the people at the top, the wealthiest people in our society, kind of like things the way they are.
Of course.
Yeah. And so you can expect them to use some of their money to try to make sure that change doesn't happen. And so government is an easy place for them to wield that power. So it is pretty slow moving. One thing I would do if I was elected would be completely change over the people in Washington, D.C. that are meeting every day in councils, you know, advising the president or advising agencies, you know, trying to figure out where policies should go, because the people that are there doing that today are just too much business as usual. They've grown up programmed to believe that we can just grow forever.
Well, and they're in place to serve the elite.
Yeah. We need to stop chasing growth, and we need to find ways to take care of everybody, the rest of the people who aren't mega wealthy, help them figure out how to survive and thrive as we scale back overconsumption and scale back our economy. So it's just completely 180 degrees out of phase with what we've been doing for the last 50 or 100 years. So,
yeah.
But you won't get to experience that because I don't think I'm going to be in the White House pulling those levers.
Well, but it starts here. This is how it starts. You know, I mean, there are people who go for several, you know, election rounds before they're able to be seen in the public eye and these different things. I mean, it's not, you know, it's certain things don't happen overnight, you know?
Well, it won't be me in the next election because I'm, you know, I want younger people, but hopefully I will inspire someone younger and we'll turn my campaign over to somebody younger.
I love that, Dave.
Anyway, we've dwelt on that longer than I wanted to. So let's zoom in and talk a little bit about what's going on closer to home. I wanted to share with you, Judy, I just read this the other day, that the Trails and Open Space Coalition came up with a great idea, and they're calling it the One Bag Challenge, and they're really stepping up their communication efforts to encourage everyone to just carry a bag with you when you're recreating outdoors, if you're hiking or going to the park or whatever, get in the habit of taking a bag and picking up the garbage that other people have left. And I just think that's a good idea because I hike all the time. But right. I do not leave the house with a bag thinking, oh, I need to be ready to pick up some stuff.
Well, because usually you wouldn't find trash on the trails. You know, this is a new phenomena. And I actually have just noticed it as well. And I was shocked and I kind of wished I had brought something with me. So I'm glad that they're putting this out there because I wouldn't have expected to find trash along the trails. But now you can expect it.
Yeah, depending on where you go, it can be a lot or it can be very little still. But yeah. It's too bad that there's any, but I don't pick up the trash if I don't have something, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're not going to carry it in your hands all the way for, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So, great idea. Just
it is a great idea.
Change your routine, put a bag in your pocket or in your backpack or what have you, and come out with stuff that you didn't go in with. So, I think that's a cool idea.
Yeah, like leave no trace, next level.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah. On steroids. Disappointing news that they also announced no Starlight Spectacular this year or going forward. Starlight Spectacular has been the big annual fundraising event for the Trails and Open Space Coalition.
Oh, no.
So they're going to have to raise funds in some other way. But it was really fun because it was a bicycle ride and a hike. Used to start at midnight at Garden of the Gods in the middle of the summer. Great summer event. They moved it back. So it started at 10 p.m. the last year or two, but a lot of people would gather. And I don't know, it was like a 6 or 8 mile bike ride through Garden of the Gods and through a little bit of Colorado Springs and Old Colorado City. And then you end up back at Garden of the Gods again. And they're cooking pancakes for you. So you have a pancake breakfast when you finish the ride.
Oh my gosh, that's too good. Yeah. And what's going on? Why no Starlight Spectacular?
It was just getting way too expensive. Oh. You know, the police that they have to have to, you know, to keep it safe on city streets at night. And apparently attendance was starting to drop off a little bit too.
That's wild.
And you know, Judy, I think we're still getting some of that post-COVID effect.
A
lot of people haven't just jumped right back into being out there in public face-to-face.
No, I mean, a lot of people have changed their routines.
Yeah.
They've just changed how they operate.
Yeah. And that's too bad because we really do need FaceTime.
Yeah, that is so sad because it's interesting because it makes me think of the larger cities. When I was in Boston, they would have a bike ride every month where we would literally take over the streets and we fill the road on a path. And I don't think it was organized with the police at all.
Wow.
And I don't think it cost anybody any money. And so I'm just kind of in my mind thinking, man, I wish, you know, there was a way we could, you know, do the effort with less of a budget, you know?
That would be nice. Sort of turning the corners, there are, in the fundraising category, but another category, the National MS Society is about to start a season of fun outdoor recreational events that are fundraising. And in fact, as part of this episode, we're going to have a conversation with some of the people that are leading the charge for these events. A walk that starts right here downtown at Acacia Park, and a real big statewide bicycle ride in June, and a miniature golf tournament in August, and a few other odds and ends. So I'm going to be talking to the organizers of these events. You're not because of some scheduling stuff.
But, unfortunately.
But that'll be a part of this episode.
So good.
So shall we jump to that interview right here?
Let's jump.
Here we go. Well, welcome Casey McBride and Amy Streetmater to the studio. Casey is a managing several of the walks, and you're also the development manager for the Colorado-Wyoming chapter. Mm-hmm. And Amy, you're a very active volunteer. You're on the Walk MS committee, and you also live with MS, don't you?
Yes, correct.
Maybe we should start there to help people kind of understand a little bit about MS. Tell us a little bit about what it's like living with MS, Amy.
Sure. It is a difficult one to explain to people because it's so different for so many different people. First of all, there's different versions of MS, relapsing remitting and primary progressive. Relapsing remitting is what I have, and it's called that because you would get a flare-up, then go back mostly to normal, and then possibly get another flare-up later, whereas primary progressive doesn't generally improve. So it's difficult right there. Just people don't know. A lot of people don't know there's different versions of MS. And then even for people with relapsing remitting, I've been lucky that I don't have dramatic side effects or symptoms that I worry about. It's mostly been eyesight issues for me. But I always wonder every day what's going to happen tomorrow. And tomorrow something could hit that would make it difficult to walk or difficult to use my hands. And worry about cognitive issues that are always a worry with MS. And I certainly know a lot of people who are dealing with those. So a lot of it is the difficulty for me personally is more the wondering. There's always a list of, you know, like 10 symptoms you could have, and nobody knows which ones you'll have and when. If you do have them, when they would hit. And then also just the time spent. My second job is making and attending doctor's appointments between the scheduling MRIs, scheduling neurologist visits, and then going to all of those and refilling medicines and taking medicines. I feel like that's kind of a second job.
Yeah, and you have to be pretty diligent about that because it could be a lot worse if you don't catch it when it starts to get more active.
Exactly, and that's always the worry. Like, oh my gosh, I missed that medicine this morning. Am I not going to be able to walk tomorrow? You know, that sounds a bit extreme, but it's actually possible.
Well, and speaking of extreme, kind of describe for our listeners how, you know, how much more life-altering it can be for some people with MS.
Yeah. I know quite a few people who use scooters or walkers or wheelchairs to get around. Sometimes it's because of truly issues walking, and sometimes it's sensation in the feet. That means it's just hard to catch your balance, so it's too easy to fall. So they have to use some support in order to do that. And I have a few friends who are dealing with a lot of cognitive issues where it's just, they call it, you know, brain fog that is just kind of difficult to speak or to come up with ideas. And for me personally, I don't know if I'm lucky that I haven't had those, or more likely it's because I was diagnosed after there were quite a few medicines already out, which are due to people raising money and funding all the research that brought up these amazing medicines that can stop it. The majority of the people who I know that are dealing with issues have had MS a lot longer. And when they were first diagnosed, there weren't as very many options. And so they had more issues. They had more symptoms come along before the medicines could stop them.
Yeah, that's a really great segue to what I want to ask you about, Casey, is, you know, we're talking about fundraising for the National MS Society. So tell us a little bit about what the National MS Society does.
Yeah, so the MS Society has a whole different multitude of different kinds of fundraising efforts, different supports that they offer for individuals living with MS. We have over 200 walks across the country. We also have bike MS, and we are very lucky to have hike MS here in Colorado. It's not something you see across the country. But we also have people that do their own fundraisers and, you know, then take the funds raised from that and donate it to the society. I have a donor up in Wyoming who put on a metal concert this March, and, you know, she donated the funds from that fundraiser to the society. And so, you know, we have a whole bunch of different kinds of fundraisers that you can do, but there's also a lot more that the society offers. We have MS navigators who really can help walk alongside individuals who are newly diagnosed, who've been diagnosed for, you know, years and decades. They can help from getting a new AC unit in your house to helping you find a neurologist or helping you understand different terminology and just kind of make sense of this, you know, disease and everything. And so that's one thing that I love about the society. It's very well-rounded. It's not just there to fundraise. They do a lot of direct services for individuals and the caretakers of those that have MS.
Yeah. So if you when you're first diagnosed with MS, wow, what a bunch of questions you have. Mm-hmm. And the MS Society is a good place to turn. Mm-hmm. But also, I think you're on a quest to find a cure too, aren't you?
Yeah, that's what our mission is to find a cure. And, you know, I know that's a really grand, you know, one to have, but I feel like with the advances that, you know, we've had in research, like I really truly believe that that reality is, you know, in the near future. And it's great because the research that we're doing for MS is also helping influence other diseases like Parkinson's and stuff like that as well. So it's not just going to directly impact and improve those living with MS. It could potentially affect other disorders and diseases as well.
It seems like Colorado has one of the highest rates of MS, doesn't it?
I've heard that too, but I've talked with a few other people about the question is, does Colorado have more MS or do more people with MS live in Colorado? Because they're not necessarily the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
That I know from some people, they've said that the climate here is helpful for MS, that it's not the hot and humid, which can be pretty brutal for that. And although we certainly get snow and ice, it doesn't last for months at a time like it does in some places like the Midwest where I'm from. Uh-huh. And so you're not worried about slipping on that if you have balance issues. And then also, I moved here from Chicago about a little over 10 years ago.
Congratulations.
And I met with groups with my neurologist there. And when I told them that I was moving here, everybody in my group, all people with MS, said that, oh my gosh, you're so lucky. You'll be able to go to the Rocky Mountain MS Center in Denver. And they couldn't believe that I would be able, and that is where I go to my neurologist now. And they couldn't believe I would be that lucky to be able to go there. So I'm not sure if people in Colorado are more likely to get it or if we just have a lot of people here.
Attract them. Yeah, good point. But I think one in every 550 people in Colorado is impacted by MS is what I've read.
Yeah.
Does that sound about right?
Yeah. And it does seem to affect more women than men also. And so, you know, I know that's also something that, you know, they're trying to research and figure out why, you know, this disease oftentimes does affect women more often than men. And so it's just, you know, I think Amy brings up a very valid point though. Is it something in Colorado that can be affecting it, or is it we just have the resources here to help those with it? So, yeah. But yeah, it is seen more often in women than in men.
And I think, does that make researchers think that there's some hormonal component, right? But there's also a genetic component, apparently, isn't there?
Yeah. You know, a lot of the individuals that I work with that have MS, they often see it in their sisters or their mothers or, you know, cousins and stuff like that. And so more often than not, the folks that I have worked with, it's something that has affected the family, not just that individual. There's more than one mm-hmm. that have had this diagnosis.
And that's right. What a friend of mine from college was dealing with at one point in her life. She has MS and was married and wanting to have children. And then the question is, one, would it be risky for me personally,
right,
to give birth, and to would I pass it on to my children? And she did end up having three children, and they're all adults now so far, so good there. But she was commenting on the hormone issue too, that it must be something there, exactly which hormone and why and how, who knows, but that she said the only time her MS seemed to pretty much go away was during pregnancy. And then she said, and then the worst it ever was right after giving birth. So there's clearly some element of it there, at least for some people.
Yeah, that's interesting.
But exactly what, who knows.
But fortunately, there are a lot more medical treatments today than there were in the 70s and 80s and and before. And a lot of that is thanks to the research that that these fundraising events support. So let's talk about the fun. And the fundraising,
yeah.
Shall we?
Yeah, yeah. The Society, like I had mentioned, has over 200 walks across the country, but we have six here in the Colorado-Wyoming market. Pueblo being April 27th, and then we have Denver on May 4th. Denver is the largest walk in the country, bringing in about 5,000 folks. And so the biggest issue we're running into right now is, where is everybody parking down in Denver? So that's a good problem to have. The same day, we also have a walk up on the Western Slope in Grand Junction. And so those are both taking place on May 4th. And then we have Windsor, which is also a really large walk on May 11th. And Boulder on the 18th, as well as the one here in Colorado Springs. So we have one in Wyoming on June 1st. So we get a little bit of a, I think there's like a week break between all the ones in Colorado before we head up to Wyoming. And so there's a lot of events taking place in the next few weeks. And then after walk wraps up, bike starts going, which is also a really large event here in Colorado as well.
Well, let's talk about walk for another minute first. The Colorado Springs event is when?
May 18th.
May 18th.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty easy walk. You don't have to, I mean, it's not like you're signing up for
a marathon. You're not committed to 30 miles or anything like that. We have a couple of different options, and really it's very flexible within those options. There's a 1 mile route and a 3 mile route. We have volunteers that will be going around and helping anybody that, you know, maybe committed to too much than they had hoped for and, you know, want to hop on a car back or whatever. So whatever you can do is, you know, we're happy to have. I know I've spoken with some constituents that, you know, the mile is challenging for them. And so they still sign up for the walk, but they walk virtually. So they walk within their neighborhood, within a route that they know that they can handle and they're comfortable with. And so it's really flexible. We're not going to make you finish your 1 mile or 3 mile if you can't do it.
And it's pretty cool in Colorado Springs because it starts and ends in Acacia Park, right?
Yep, yep.
Which is in the middle of downtown. There's a lot to do downtown, and merchants really support it. So it's real easy to stop at a coffee shop before or after, or even in the middle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. You've got options. You can do some shopping on your walk path.
Yep.
Yeah, no, it's going to be a fun event. We always run the dice though with weather in Colorado. So you have to come prepared for, you know, anything from 80 degrees to snowing, but it'll be a good time for sure.
Yeah, and I should say, I'm pretty sure Starbucks has been one of the sponsors.
Yep. Starbucks will be there.
So you don't have to stop at a coffee shop.
Nope.
You can.
It will be there, yeah.
Yeah, right there.
They will be there.
Park, you can get some Starbucks. And the way it works is, in a perfect world, somebody wants to participate, they kind of start well before May 18th, right? They sign up and raise money. They get pledges to, I say, I'm going to walk for MS. Will you support my walk and donate $25,000.
Yeah, if only everybody, right? Registration for our walks are opening earlier this year. And so they opened back in November. And so, but you can sign up literally day of the walk. You know, if you didn't sign back up in November, you're still eligible to sign up. And we do peer-to-peer fundraising. And so just because you sign up doesn't mean that you're the one writing that check for, you know, your goal. You can reach out to your network, your coworkers, family, friends, and really talk with them about why this mission is so important to yourself and, you know, what it would mean if they were to support you. And so we have different goals along the way. Each registration, that you have. You get your own little website that keeps track of all of your goals. You can personalize it, tell your story. You know, it's really, really personalizable. And everybody who fundraises $100 will get a MS t-shirt. Those shirts are going to be mailed to everybody's house this year. That's one thing that's different this year is we aren't handing out t-shirts at the walk anymore. We're mailing them. And so that's something that a lot of nonprofits are shifting to. It's a real big cost savings effort. And so more of the funds that are being raised are going to that mission. And of course, if you don't want a t-shirt, you can always pass on it as well. But I think orange looks good on everybody personally.
So you're right that even that 1 mile walk can be a challenge for some, but for somebody who's in reasonably good shape, it's pretty much a walk in the park. Mm-hmm. If you want something a little bit more challenging, then we've got Bike MS.
Yeah,
we've got Bike. And boy, is that challenging.
Yeah. Bike is a 2-day event. And so there's a couple of different options there as far as mileage goes. But it's a 2-day event. It starts in Westminster, which is, you know, north from here. And it's a big thing. I almost would borderline say it's cult-like following with the bikers and everything like that. They get to go and meet up at a brewery in between the 2 days. And, you know, it's a big party, really. And so, you know, that's a really big fun event, as well as hike as well.
And you ride, day one, you ride up to Fort Collins, mm-hmm. and then stay in Fort Collins, and then day two, you ride back to Westminster, right back to where you probably parked your car. Let's see, what else can we tell people? There are a number of different routes, so your mileage can vary, but it's a significant ride.
It is, yeah. And you don't have to commit to the full 2 days. So if you can only do the 1 day, you know, that's something that you can do. You're not writing any contracts in blood or anything like that. You know, whatever you're willing and wanting to do, you know, we're here for. And again,
there's fantastic support. So you can quit almost anywhere.
You can. And somebody will come pick you
up. They're going to pick you up.
Yep.
You have a flat tire. Somebody's going to help you out.
Yeah. Thankfully, we have a lot of partnerships with a lot of different bike shops and stuff. And, you know, they're there to help support any mechanical issues that you may have. But it is a very fun and big event. There's also several bike events across the country. It's not just something that happens in Colorado.
And the Colorado one is June what?
June 29th and 30th.
Okay. And it can be a little bit warm then, mm-hmm. but the cool thing is most people starts pretty early, and usually you're finished with that day's ride before the real heat of the afternoon.
The heat starts coming.
You're into the party part of the...
Yeah. You're getting your refreshments at that point. Right.
Yeah. And it's not a race, so you can take as long as you want.
Exactly.
Lots of rest stops where there's restrooms. And
Yeah, we have that both at bike and at walk. We have different hydration stations throughout each of the courses. So we want to make sure that everybody is having a good time, but is also safe and healthy.
Now, my wife, Ruth, lives with MS, but she's a lucky one like you, Amy. She's, you know, still able to be quite active. And so Bike MS turned her into a real active bicyclist year-round. She's constantly training. And in fact, she even goes out to California usually every mm-hmm. year to ride in one or two of their rides as well. You would think, now here's what she tells me, you would think that you could burn a lot of calories and maybe it would be good, you know, a good weight loss program. But if you eat all the goodies that are put in front of you at these rest stops, it's going to be a net gain, isn't it?
Yeah. That is one thing that we try to do, especially at walk, is make sure that everybody leaves feeling satisfied, I guess you could say. We have some special treats coming for Colorado Springs for our top fundraiser area. We have Hertz Donuts coming. And so I know for like my husband, that's all the reason to sign up and fundraise right there. So, you know, we definitely try to spoil our fundraisers and just show a lot of appreciation. And we do that with the support of local shops.
Okay. And tell me about Hike MS, because I'm really not familiar with that.
Yeah. So Hike MS is July 27th, and it takes place up in Keystone. There is also a couple of different options for how serious of a hike you want to have. And so, you know, you can start from the base and go all the way up. You can ride the gondola up and make it a shorter hike. But, you know, it's something that we want everybody who wants to participate in to be able to participate in. And so that's something that we really pride at the society, that, you know, if you're in a wheelchair, like, we're going to make this work for you. And so, you know, the gondola is a great option. And it's something that just happens here in Colorado. So can't really do hike MS in Wyoming or something like that.
And then tell me, I'm thinking, is Sync MS, is it unique to Colorado Springs?
So yes, Sync MS, as far as I know, it just happens here.
They're really clever here.
It is. It's a fun event. It's something that really is put together by our committee. And it's something, you know, that they came up with. It's, you know, it's a wraparound event is what we call it. And so they have a putt-putt tournament where they get a bunch of donations and sponsorships and everything. And it's just a lot of fun and it raises quite a bit of money. I do know, though, other walk sites are looking to to encroach on that and start adapting it to their area as well. But, you know, it's, we really love when our constituents take a passion of their own and make it into a fundraiser. And, you know, you can really see the joy that they have being able to do what they love with what passion they have while also raising funds for the cause that they love.
Yeah, I've been to a couple of those Sync MS events, and they're great. And I don't think they're going to move because they get great support from Goldmine Mini Golf. It's a great it's a great facility, and I don't think there's a date yet, but it's
we're working on an early August date.
Early August.
Yeah.
Yep, a lot of fun. Yeah.
And with all the events, the nice thing is you can do them individually or as a team. So if, you know, if I say, "Oh, I, you know, I got 20 friends to donate, but they all live in different parts of the country," then I might go and do the walk on my own, but with the funds that I was able to raise that way. Or I can bring 20 of my friends from Colorado Springs who donated and walk with me, and we could all walk as a team. So there are various options, and that's the same case for bike and hike. You can
pretty neat.
Do them either way.
So if someone wants to explore these a little bit, learn a little bit more about them or sign up, where do they go?
So for walk, you can go to walkms.org, and you can click on the Find My Walk tab, and the easiest way is just plug in your zip code and it will pull up the closest walk for you. We're really lucky in Colorado to have as many as we do, because I know May is oftentimes a very busy time of the year for people with graduations and end of the school year and all that. And so I know for some folks, you know, maybe the May 18th date didn't work, but May 4th worked, and you know, they can make a trip up to Denver. And so we are very lucky to have, you know, a couple of different options, you know, relatively close to one another.
And Amy, since you're volunteering, there's no need for volunteers to help with any of these events. You got it covered, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The three or four of us got it all sorted. No, we could always, always use more help day of, you know, or the day before, getting everything ready to go. And, cleaned up afterwards too.
Yeah, so. And especially like volunteering for Bike MS, there's a lot of need for able-bodied people to pitch in on that, but you still get to enjoy some of the party atmosphere well. So that's
exactly
a good one to volunteer for. So if someone thinks they want to volunteer, what's the route to get
into
that?
So they can go to the same website, and then once you find your walk, there'll be a tab for volunteers, and you can just go ahead and sign up there. There's a link, and it has different descriptions of the various jobs that are available. We have everything from setup and teardown to cheerleading to hydration station. You know, if you aren't able to move that well and you can't really participate and walk, but you still want to be involved, there's going to be a volunteer spot for you. So, you know, we love our volunteers. This next week is National Volunteer Appreciation Week. And without our volunteers, none of our walks would be successful. And when you do sign up for volunteering, you do get a shirt. So it's a lovely blue shirt. And who doesn't love a free t-shirt?
All right. Is there more to the story about funding and research that we should share?
I can talk about the like where the money goes and stuff like that and how much of like your donation goes. I think that's really important because I think a lot of people, you know, when they donate money, you know, how much of my money is actually going to the cause? How much of it is actually going to research?
Versus the cost of your mega yacht off the coast. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
And I think also the snippet of how quickly it's changed in the past few years.
Yeah,
That I think the first drug for MS was approved in 92, mm-hmm. I believe, which every time I tell that to somebody, they're like, no way. They would have said at least 10 years before that mm-hmm. was what the 70s or 80s is what they would have assumed if they couldn't believe it was that late. And then even when I was diagnosed 15 years ago, I had 5 options. And the 5th one was brand new. And now I think there's like 18 or something. I can't even keep track because there's a new one every day. Seems like not quite, but now there are multiple options for different, both to reduce the likelihood of getting more symptoms, but also then to other ones that help assuage certain, if you have a symptom, like debilitating symptom, they might be able to make it a little bit less.
Yeah, and if you catch it, early enough, some of these treatments today, you can really virtually arrest progression of the disease.
Yeah,
which is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I started on my first one. They said it was still progressing a little bit, so they switched me to the newest one, and that was 13 years ago, and they haven't seen any progression since I switched then. But we do know in the 2 years before that, it definitely was still so. We know that's the medicine that was helping that.
And you really never, you know, you can't ever rest because it seems like every person has a slightly different experience with this disease.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit more about how you guys allocate the funds.
Yeah. So the MS Society, when we fundraise, that money is going back to research. And when we do our research, we're sharing our information. It's not gatekeeped or anything like that. And so, like I had mentioned earlier, how some of the research that the society is doing for MS is also benefiting other diseases. But when you donate, 79 cents out of every dollar is going directly to improve the lives of those living with MS through the programs that we have, the services, and the research. This year, we have a very lofty goal of $31 million fundraised for Walk MS. And so, you know, we have some high goals, but we have some amazing constituents and supporters that are helping us reach those goals. But, you know, when you donate, your money is going directly back to it. And sometimes it's a little bit easier to understand your impact. So if, you know, you donate $35, it's going to help a self-help group for those that live with MS. And $65 can help fund a wellness program. $120 can help pay for physical therapy. $200 can help influence the change by engaging with elected officials. And so that's the other portion of the society, too. We're very active up on the Hill, too, fighting for individuals, caretakers, families living with MS. Because when someone's diagnosed with MS, it's not just that individual. It's the entire circle around them. I could also talk about the new experience, too.
Oh, yeah.
This year, the walks are going to look a little bit different. We're rolling out what we're calling is a new experience. And so the whole theme of it is circles of support. And so when you come up to the walk, you're going to see the circle theme everywhere. When you come, you're going to get an option to get 3 different circle flags. There's orange, yellow, and green, and they all represent a different person, someone who lives with MS, someone who's a direct caretaker of MS, and someone who's just here to help support the cause. And so during this walk, we have this very emotional and engaging presentation where everybody participating in the walk will be involved with raising their flag, showing how they are in this fight. And I get goosebumps just talking about it every single time I watch the video. It's really, really amazing. Denver was lucky enough to be one of the pilots last year. And so Denver was one of five last year that did it. And it was just incredible. The circles of support are around everywhere. And everybody's just there for each other. And it's just very captivating. And so that's going to look a little bit different. So that alongside the t-shirts are going to see your biggest change this year. But the walk, you know, it's all going to feel the same. Everybody's there together to fight this cause and bring hope.
And I think that when you see, too, the people that have the flags that say that they are dealing with MS, I think that's when you also, if you were at the walk, you see the wide range of effects that this has on people.
Yeah.
That you know, when you see people out and about and you realize, oh, these 50 people all have MS, and some I can't even tell, and some are in wheelchairs and everything in between. And so you realize the huge gamut of how it does affect people. And a lot of people, you'll think, oh, wow, they look completely normal, but they might have, you know, tingling in their arms or eyesight issues that are kind of invisible to other people.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can't thank you both enough for the great work that you're doing. And thanks a lot for sharing all this with us today. There's going to be plenty to do to help support the very good work that the National MS Society is doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'd love to have everybody out. So
thank you for doing this.
We'll see you at the walk.
Sounds good.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, now we're back.
All right.
Back with Judy after that great conversation.
Yeah,
and of course,
so powerful.
Neither one of us have heard that conversation yet because we're pre-recording the open and close to this episode on April 18th.
My godmother suffered from multiple sclerosis, and so I grew up as a little girl watching her really deteriorate over time. It's heart-wrenching. It is actually heart-wrenching. And so I have written a poem about everyday struggle and everyday people, but this poem came up in my mind when you told me that we were going to be hearing from the multiple sclerosis fundraisers. And so I wanted to read this as a shout out to the struggle that they go through, but also to kind of bring it forward and connect it. You know, life is relative. We all have struggle, and it's, you know, power of perspective in a lot of ways, how we wrap our head around that. So,
all right, take it away, Judy.
I took some pictures on the first day of winter. Flowers blooming, just in time to speak out, making their own rhythm. To be covered in snow. The next thing you know. But now it's spring, and I think that they're still asleep. So I wrote this. Wake up in the darkest of dark. Cold sweat when you think you've hit rock. Sit up. Blink, but it seems that you're not. Try to breathe, but the air just gets caught. Strain to fight, but your muscles are taut. Mean to scream, but your voice has been lost. Reach for earth, but you're sinking in rot, like the world has forgot. Plant a seed in the richness of your doubt. Pull the nutrients from your deteriorating. Be the heat and send your roots out deep. Face the sun and melt away the waiting. Spring is a time to sprout. Feed your soul and let your next thoughts blossom and shout. Rooted in pandemonium turned inside out. Become immune so you bloom through summer's drought. And when autumn comes back around again, let go and fall apart in the wind. Winter will come. And we will seep again. It's up to us to use what we lose for gain. We are perennials. Let's go around the sun in a new way.
You know what?
What?
When I am elected president, I'm going to appoint you the poet laureate of the United States.
You're too kind, Dave.
I just love, you have such a way with words. It's incredible.
Too kind.
Bravo, bravo, applause.
Thank you. So, if you want to be in the know and be a good community citizen, check out Studio 809podcast.com to find many other community podcasts. in the Studio 809 podcast family.
In fact, Judy, I'd really like to highlight one of my favorite local podcasts because it's got a good connection to the next us here, Pedal the Springs. Their most recent episode, as you know, was recorded in front of a live audience in the beautiful meeting space here at The Next Us.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, it was. They had quite a crowd. What they did is they spotlighted the Colorado Springs Cycling Club. So the club had a meeting here, and Tori Giffen, the great energetic and enthusiastic host of Pedal the Springs, just kind of conducted this great assortment of voices to share interesting things with the club and about the club. And that's their most recent episode, where if you listen to podcasts, just look for Pedal the Springs, or if you want to shop at studio809podcast.com for podcasts, you can also find it there on the internet. But anyway, every now and then I just want to put in a good word for one of the many fine community podcasts that are emanating from this great studio here at The Next Us.
I love that. Thank you. And until next time, in honor of Earth Day, April 22nd, in the words of Robert Swan, the first person to have both walked the North and South Poles, the greatest danger to our planet is the belief that someone else will save it. Whoa.
Food for thought. All right. Thanks
Thank
for
you,
listening.
Dave.
Good
Thank
to see you. Till next time.
In the Pikes Peak region, there's no shortage of activities. Whether you're experiencing breathtaking parks or magnificent works of art, if you're getting fashionable at a film festival, or fresh at a farmer's market, if you want to hear the sweet sounds of a symphony or the smooth shred of a Stratocaster, look no further than Peak Radar, your one-stop shop for all events in the Pikes Peak region, your free source for viewing and posting events. So no matter how you engage with our beautiful region, visit peakradar.com and get plugged into the peak.